Warning, the Catholic Man Show contains high levels of manliness. If you think you may be too weak to withstand the manliness represented in the following program, please do yourself a favor and stop listening now. If you choose to continue in spite of this warning, if at any time you feel yourself overcome by the manliness, stop immediately and consult your closest medical professional. And now, for the not-so-fair, faint, or frilly, we present The Catholic Man Show.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side, so raise your glass. Adam Minahan here, sitting with David Niles, and we have a special guest in studio today. I'm really pumped.
Me too.
He flew all the way from Alabama just to be here today.
You ever been to Greenbow, Alabama?
Greenbow.
It exists in the movie Forrest Gump.
I know, but I've never been there, but I have a good friend from there.
Okay, yeah. Sweet. Yeah. Is his name Forrest?
Tom.
He sounds like a nice guy.
I like Tom. I'll let you introduce
our guest. Okay, yeah, so we're here with the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. John Martinoni. John, thank you so much for squeezing us in today. And you're here for other things, but we were able to commandeer your presence.
It is my pleasure to be here, gentlemen. And I think that actually, when I go home and talk about my experience of coming to Tulsa, that this actually might be the centerpiece of my conversations. I've got a feeling.
Well, yeah, hopefully it's good. We'll see.
This is sort of like
Well, whether it's good or not.
Yeah.
Either way, it will be the centerpiece of my conversations.
Like, how was your trip to San Francisco? Oh, it was beautiful. It was fine. But you know what was really crazy? I saw this weirdo. And I feel like in this case, we might be the weirdo.
Well, that's all right.
Hey, at least we're a Catholic weirdo.
We are, yeah.
Which I'm fine with, really.
Yes.
I'm okay with it.
Look, weird is good in my book, okay? So.
Okay, well, this is going to be good then. So if this is your first time listening to the Catholic Man Show, we do three things every episode. We're men, we like structure, so we stick to this format. The first thing we do is we open, review, and enjoy a man beverage. The second thing we do is we highlight a man gear, and then we have the most manly discussion of all time on terrestrial radio and podcast. We won again this week for most manliest podcast.
We did not win the best grammar podcast.
No.
Most manliest.
Yeah. Would not be it.
But we did win the most manliest.
Yes.
We give out the award, John.
I was kind of thinking, I wonder who the judges are.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's get into the beverage.
Okay.
I'll let you pour it.
I'm excited to have a beverage today. We're recording this today on the Feast of the Holy Name of Mary. And so it just feels, it seems fitting to be in a celebratory fashion.
Sure. And this is the first time we've had scotch in quite a while on the show.
That is a shame.
Well, you know, typically we've been sticking to like a bourbon in the summertime and a beers and bourbon in the summer. Scotch for me is a good fall winter drink.
I agree.
So today
for me it's also a good spring summer drink. Okay. I'm a both and guy.
I'm very
both and with scotch. Yeah,
that's the Catholic way.
Yeah, I agree.
Both and.
Yeah.
So we'll cheers and then we will we'll talk about it. We're on the Lord's team,
the winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
Cheers.
What do you think?
It's actually pretty smooth. It has it has a little bit of citrus at the on the palate.
I can smell lemon in it.
Yes. It's Aaron Malt. It's a 10-year, 46% alcohol, distilled and matured and bottled in Scotland, obviously being a scotch. It's non-chill filtered.
Non-chill filtered.
Yes.
I wonder what that means. I mean, I know what it means, but I wonder what it does.
It says it's...
I wonder what it does to the flavor.
It says it's fresh and vibrant and has some vanilla and citrus notes, dominated with a dominated to create a smooth and mellow dram.
That's what I was going to say. It seems like it's a very smooth and mellow dram.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
First thing that was just
That popped into your mind?
That and my chest is on fire.
Dave, why don't you let's talk a little bit about why we drink on air.
Okay.
Because John's, you know, has not, this is his first time. We may have some new listeners. Let's talk about that
for
just a second.
Sure, yeah. So we drink, ironically enough, we drink in order to promote moderation. It's difficult to promote moderation if you do no drinking. So in order to achieve that middle ground, you have to drink a little bit. I mean, you could talk about moderation. But anyway, the goals of our show is to promote virtue. That's really what we hope the Catholic Man Show is doing for you, the listener, is promoting the idea of living the virtuous life. And drinking alcohol is a very important thing to maintain virtue, and so we want to promote moderation. Also, we drink because the beverages that we enjoy are good, and they should be enjoyed for that reason alone. Anything that is good, hold on to these things. That's a summary from an author you may have heard of. His name is St. Paul. So that's one. That's another reason why we drink.
Just vaguely familiar.
Yeah, yeah. He's been on the top seller list
quite
a couple
while.
Times. Yeah,
he's dominated actually.
Right, and so having a drink with your brothers or with a new friend is a good way to develop a relationship with them, to grow in holiness together. You know, because you could have a really good conversation. Having a drink kind of opens up, I think, the soul and the spirit for those deeper conversations that are sometimes hard to just
jump into.
Yeah.
Well, and that's, John, that's kind of how we started this show. Is Dave and I, we have a men's group that we meet with once a month, and we get together and we share a dram or we share a beer, and we have a talk on philosophy, theology, something, whatever's happening in our lives. And we thought we can incorporate that into our into a radio show. So that's kind of how we started.
All good.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite drink?
I should have asked that before.
Alcoholic beverage, or?
I would say a favorite manly drink.
Well,
like coffee, I think, is a manly drink.
Coke is my
go-to.
That's your go-to
drink of preference. Yes.
Now, when you say Coke, because you know sometimes depending on what part of the country you're in,
this is,
you mean Coca-Cola,
straight out Coca-Cola, the pure stuff,
the original,
raw Coca-Cola.
Yeah, right on.
On the rocks.
No.
No.
Actually, no.
No on the rocks.
No.
Okay.
Maybe one ice cube. Maybe.
But chilled?
Yes. Room temperature as well. I mean,
really?
Anywhere from slight chill to room temperature. Mm-hmm. Anywhere in between there. And I'm good to go.
All right.
Yeah.
Do you have any men's groups that you have out there in Alabama that you're part of, or that you hear about, or Knights of Columbus, or?
Well, I am a knight. I'm a first-degree knight.
Mm-hmm.
I have been a first-degree knight for some 25 years now, I believe.
Nice.
And every knight's council I move to, when we move to a new parish, they say, hey, you need to come for the second degree, and then the third degree, and then the fourth degree. I say, no, I do not. Because once you become a second degree, then they say, well, you need to become a third degree. And once you've got your third degree, they say, hey, you might as well do the fourth degree. But then once you do the fourth degree, they say, hey, we need you to come here at this time and here at this time and there. And, you know, the bishop's calling for all the fourth degrees and this. And I don't have the time for that.
Right.
Maybe someday.
So, maybe someday.
Yeah.
Once the last of my young'uns gets out of the house. Which none of them have gotten out of the house yet. So maybe then. But between my travel schedule, family, and I do a lot of, in the diocese, I do a lot of speaking at night in the parishes.
Yeah.
I don't want to make a commitment that I can't fulfill.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I stay at first degree, and that's that.
You know, I am a first degree.
Oh, are
for
you?
For that very reason. As well, they made it very clear. They said, as soon as you become a second degree, then you can start being in on the council and all, you know, become part of the.
You can't be an officer,
right?
As a first degree knight.
Okay, first degree is where I'm at.
So I joined when I was a single bachelor. So I had time, and I used to do
a
lot.
As opposed to a married bachelor?
Well, yeah. I suppose. I was single and a bachelor because I was single. So I used to do a lot more stuff, but
yeah, very logical.
Ever since I got married and now I have three kids, it's just, I don't have time, but I just really appreciate the Knights and all that they do.
Yeah.
And someday I will return to a meeting. I'll come to a meeting one of these days. I know it.
We only have a couple, maybe a minute left, but what's going on EWTN? What's the news and the buzz?
Well, I'm actually only there for 1 hour a week to do my radio show. So I know they're incredibly busy. They got all sorts of things going on with television. They've got their news division up in D.C. now that's, you know, going great guns. And they've got something, a new office out in California in the old Crystal Cathedral. They have offices in there now. So they're doing a lot of things. And then, you know, so TV and then radio. Every couple weeks, it seems like we're adding a new radio station to the network, which is awesome. And then the National Catholic Register, their print, they're just a full-blown media company, and they're doing awesome, awesome stuff.
EWTN is, I thank God for EWTN all the time, because you know if it comes from them, it's trustworthy.
Right.
Which is not always the case, just because it's from a Catholic outlet.
That is true.
But EWTN is so solid. So...
we're here with John Martinoni. We'll be right back. Hang in there. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. In studio with Adam Minahan, our special guest is Mr. John Martinoni. John, thanks again for being here.
Absolutely my pleasure, and I love being in studio.
So
not know why.
This is the Adam's study, and it's our studio. It's kind of a study, kind of a studio.
I thought it was like stud manly.
Well, that is the secondary.
God. Oh, see, I thought that was primary, mm-hmm. But it's secondary.
Well,
in our humility, it's
hard to say which one is.
Yeah, this is what I'm going to be talking about when I get back to Alabama.
Okay, so this the second segment is where we highlight a man gear, and I was trying to think of a man gear earlier this week. I had the opportunity to go down to Southeast Oklahoma, which is beautiful country. I don't know if you've ever been down to Southeast Oklahoma. It's mountains, hills, rivers, and I was doing some work for my father-in-law, and I had to put a trailer in the back of my truck and take it down to the creek area and load up a bunch of debris. And haul it back up. And I was thinking about...
Hey, you were bringing debris from somewhere else and back to the house.
Back to the house for a fire.
Okay. Okay.
And so I was just thinking, like, man, it would not be easy to do this by hand. I'm so glad I have a trailer here. And then I was like, why have we not talked about a trailer on the Catholic Man Show before? That was my train of thought.
No, I think it's a...
of why it's a gear.
The reason why I think this is an excellent man gear is because I want one so bad. You know, like, there's those times where you have a bunch of crap and you need to take it to the dump or something. And you just, it's like, what are you supposed to do if you don't have a trailer, what do you do? Mm. I don't know. I guess you do that move where you know the rules about what the trash company is allowed to take and you kind of double it to see if they just take it anyway. You know, and sometimes that works. Sometimes that works.
Sometimes.
But then at the times it doesn't work, you're left with the embarrassing situation where everybody's coming home from work and you still have a bunch of trash in your front yard.
Yeah. We sprung this on John. John, I don't know, you probably, do you have any fun trailer stories?
No, I'm
trying. Is there such a thing as fun trailer stories?
I have never
heard of a fun trailer story.
Well, yeah, that too. But I have never pulled a trailer behind my car. Now, I've had a... Got all the stuff. What's the little thing with the knob on top? The
ball?
Well...
The hitch?
The hitch. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I had a hitch, and I was pulling... What did I have a hitch for? It wasn't pulling a trailer. I was pulling something. This was several years ago. When you get to be my age, they all start running together, the years and everything and events, and it's hard to separate them out. Especially when your throat and chest and gullet are on fire. But so I've never had a trailer. But I have, you know, I won't say not sin envy level, but I have envied. I've got a guy, a friend of mine, he's a handyman. Mm-hmm. He's got a trailer. Mm-hmm. And there have been many times where I've called him and said, Jamie, I need your trailer.
Right.
I need you over here because I've got stuff that needs to be hauled to the dump.
Right.
You know, and I can't do that by myself. And I'm a very independent person. So I don't like having to call Jamie and rely on him for his trailer. So I'm going to tell you this. I haven't said this to anybody else. This
first time. First time here on the Catholic Man Show.
About 3 weeks ago, I was on Craigslist looking at trailers.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
It's meant to be.
It's providence.
Yeah. So
the Holy Spirit is hilarious.
So this could be a sign for me. Get that trailer.
get it. Buy it. Yeah.
Your wife, we're going to get like hate mail from your wife. Like.
Well, no, not from my wife. I live in one of those neighborhoods that has rules and regulations.
And I'm sure,
I mean, I get a letter when my dog accidentally gets out and does something in the neighbor's yard. Instead of the neighbor coming over and say, hey, could you clean up your dog's mess? I get a letter from the management company saying, keep your dog in. If my weeds get over 6 inches, you know, because, well, I've been traveling and the days that I could have mowed it, it was raining, so I couldn't mow. I get a letter from the management company. So if I have a trailer parked in my driveway, I could almost guarantee you I'll get a letter from the management company because I'm sure that's against the rules some way, somehow. So, I really would like to have a trailer.
Yeah. One thing that it does do, this is, I don't think this is actually a far-fetched for me, at least for my family. It did cultivate some father-son time, a trailer did, because I worked with my dad when he had a trailer and I was living at home back in high school. We always had to take a bunch of stuff out to a guy's house who was very immobile at the time. And so we were hauling a bunch of stuff for him. Well, my dad is a big man. He's very massive. And
he's big.
He's very strong. And so they needed some extra hands. Well, my dad would always make me go with him and we would haul things in the trailer for this guy. And I was thinking like, man, this is, you know, I'm 14, 15 years old. It's like, I got other things to do, Dad.
This is Bush League.
Yeah, I have other things I want to be doing. But he made me go with him every year, same time. We always did it. We always hauled stuff together. And it actually did cultivate this time where I got to hang out with my dad and spend some good quality time with him.
Totally.
And he always asked me about high school, what was going on, you know, some good opportunities to have real organic discussions.
I think that I put a trailer in the same category as I put swimming pools and boats. That you don't actually want one. You want your neighbor to have one. You want the guy next door to have the trailer.
So you could always use it in trucks. Like that way.
A truck could be that way. Right. It is kind of nice to have your own truck. But if he has a trailer or a boat or a swimming pool, now you don't have to pay for or take care of the trailer, boat, swimming pool. As long as he's a nice guy. If he's not a nice guy, the whole thing falls apart. Okay, it's a bad plan.
One thing we're actually going to be using a trailer for here pretty soon. John, have you ever heard of Clear Creek Abbey?
Is that the one we were talking about? Yes, I have.
We are having a camp out there in October. And we have guys actually coming from Alabama will be coming up. Guys from all over the U.S., we're all going to go and we're going to camp out at Clear Creek Abbey. And we have, we'll get a chance to pray the liturgy of the hours with the monks. We get a chance to, you know, obviously go to Mass. And we actually get to have dinner with them, a couple of us, every night. And it's so funny what happens at dinner. I'll let you tell it better, Dave. I'll let you tell them what happens at dinner.
Okay, so they eat, you know, they're contemplative, so they eat in silence. Except one monk in the corner has a little microphone, and he chants a book. Okay, for lunch, they read something secular, history, usually. And for dinner, they'll do a spiritual reading. Well, the first time I went, I didn't really know exactly what was going that this was going to happen. So I'm sitting down for lunch, and it's like, you know, a little intimidated, like, you know, I want to do it right. I'm trying to follow the rules. Like, yeah, don't say anything. And then all of a sudden, this monk starts chanting, and I didn't really pay attention at first. And then I realized, did he say Abraham Lincoln in chant? He's like, I just heard in the background, Abraham Lincoln, blah, 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 blah. It's like the Emancipation Proclamation. And then Abraham Lincoln did free the slaves, and there was much rejoicing. And like, it was just like, wait. I was having this moment looking around, like, does anybody else hear this guy? And then I realized, anything is hilarious if you chant it. It was awesome.
So we're gonna get a chance to hang out with them. Also, our buddy Juan, he cooks a pig over fire, which is awesome.
That is quite the description. He cooks a pig over fire.
Over the fire. Okay.
Is that like
he crucified.
Being a single bachelor?
Yeah, it
that's
is.
What I was wondering.
It's very, very, very similar to. So anyway, we have a lot of fun, but guys from all over the U.S. come in and we hang out together. And
now, what's the common denominator that you have guys from all over the U.S.? I mean, guys from Alabama. What is it? Is there an organization that you're all a part of, or how do they find out about all this? Or
good question. The show. TheCatholicManShow.com.
Oh, okay.
So guys who listen to the show, support the show.
And they might bring a buddy.
And they could bring
somebody
a buddy.
Might bring somebody. But
got it.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And then it's just no rules. Well, there's some rules. You know, but there's nothing. It's just we're out there camping as men. We might throw axes at stuff.
Good times.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, it's a lot of October 18th through the 21st. I think we only have one spot open left.
We do have a spot.
Yeah, because somebody canceled.
Okay.
So we have one spot left.
So right somebody on. Could come, but they wouldn't be able to bring a friend.
But they cannot bring a friend.
But yes.
But we'll be friends. We can
yes.
hang out.
Yes, that's true.
So, anyway, thecatholicmancho.com is where you can find that. Let's see. We have about a minute and a half left. We've talked about...
I have a trailer question for you.
Oh, okay.
Open or enclosed trailer? What do you like?
Well, it depends on what you're doing.
Well, if you can have one trailer, what's it going to be?
A closed.
You would take a closed trailer?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, they're certainly nicer for a lot of stuff, but you can't...
You have to haul a lot of stuff.
You can't pile, you know? Typically, closed trailers are smaller, too.
I guess.
I mean they're not as long. You know, you can get... They're also a lot more expensive.
Yeah.
But I guess if we're just picking...
That was the question you
making
asked.
Making it up. Yeah, you're right. I didn't put any stipulations on.
What about you?
I can't... I'm having trouble picturing... All the pictures I saw on Craigslist were open trailers.
Yeah. So like a U-Haul trailer, you know, those are enclosed.
Yeah, okay.
Or like when you see a grass company, like a mow company that has a bunch of stuff in a trailer, they typically
well,
have a closed.
Sometimes they have like walls.
I think open, it's just less complicated.
That's what I think too. I would go open.
All right, when we get back, we're going to jump into marriage and the Eucharist. So hang in there. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Here with John Martinoni, my best bud Dave. We're going to be talking about marriage and the Eucharist. We're going to be talking about the source and summit of our faith and the institution that keeps the world going and the importance of both and how they relate. John, you're about to give a talk here in just a little bit at Holy Family Cathedral in Tulsa on this topic. This will air after your talk, so there won't be any spoilers. But I thought it would be a good idea to let you have a little bit of a warm-up before you actually give the actual talk.
Am I supposed to talk now? Messing with you.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that, Adam. Yeah. Marriage in the Eucharist. The talk is called Marriage in the Eucharist, The Two Shall Become One. If you didn't hear it at the cathedral, this is airing after, right?
Correct.
If you didn't hear it at the cathedral, you can get it online at my website. This is a shameless plug. BibleChristianSociety.com. BibleChristianSociety.com. It's free on CD or MP3 download. What I do in the talk is I take the two sacraments, marriage and the Eucharist, and I draw parallels between the two of them. For example, I talk about how in marriage, the proper way, the proper steps are step one, two, and three when it comes to marriage and two becoming one is found in Genesis. Genesis 2, where the man leaves his mother and father, cleaves to his wife, and the two become one. And so the man leaves his home to establish his own household. So it's not a trial run or anything like that. It's, hey, I'm making a commitment. He solidifies that commitment by cleaving to his wife at the marriage ceremony. They're cleave or cloven together, you know, during the marriage ceremony. Number three, the two become one. It's when they know each other in the biblical sense for the first time. The two become one. And that's the proper sequence of events. And so often in our society today, it's number three first, the yeah. two become one. Well, they don't really become one because there's no commitment there. And they haven't been cloven, if that's the proper term.
I like it.
And so that's why our society is such a mess, because the sequence is out of order. God established this sequence, and whenever you do anything that messes with something God has established, bad things are going to happen, either individually, as a couple, as a society, etc. So, but then relating that to the Eucharist, drawing the parallel, Jesus left his mother and father. He left God the Father to become one of us. And in, you know, an act of humility that no human being could even really comprehend, much less try to repeat. Then he left his earthly mother because it was time for him to establish his household, the church. And he cleaved to his bride, which is us, the members of the church, as he was sweating blood in the Garden of Gethsemane. He cleaved to us as he was carrying his cross through Jerusalem. He cleaved to us as he was being nailed to the cross. And then the two become one. Through his death and through the institution of the Eucharist, we, by receiving the Eucharist, become one with Christ. Yeah, and I use all the scriptural passages that, you know, pertain to this, Ephesians 5 and elsewhere, about where it talks about, and in Ephesians 5, it talks about how it quotes from Genesis. Man shall leave his mother and father, cleave to his wife, two shall become one. And he says, I mean, in regard to Christ and the church. You think he's talking about man and woman, which he was talking about husband and wife preceding that. But all of a sudden he switches Christ and the church. Mm. And so there's this incredible parallel where, or parallels, there are these incredible parallels between the two sacraments. And it's, in essence, you can look at marriage in Eucharistic terms, and you can look at the Eucharist in marital terms. Hmm. And I've had people tell me that at its basis, it's a theology of the body talk, but it's something that I put together actually before I had read anything on theology of the body. And so I just kind of, you know, stumbled into that connection. But I've had people tell me that, you know, it's helped them in their marriages. You know, they look at, you know, their spouse in a different way. And it's helped them with the Eucharist because they look at that in a different way. And they realize, you know, when I'm receiving the Eucharist, this is actually a more intimate act between my God and me than what is going on between my wife and me or my husband and me.
Mm-hmm.
More intimate than that. And the two are becoming one. And that's why it's so important that we not have sin on our souls, you know, that we're not in a state of mortal sin, because we are becoming one with God through receiving the Eucharist. And I use these parallels to explain certain teachings of the church that people have trouble with. For example, sex outside of marriage. Why is that wrong? Well, it's wrong because you've screwed up the sequence. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no commitment.
Right.
So no commitment, no, you know, the husband and wife coming together in the marital embrace is the sign and the seal of the commitment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if there's no commitment, then you shouldn't be trying to sign, and you know, there's no sign of it, and there's, you can't seal it.
Right. Mm-hmm. If you're not married, then the ends of the sexual union don't match the reality of your situation. Yeah.
Exactly. You're engaging in a lie.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying with your bodies, we've committed to each other for life, but you haven't. So you're lying first and foremost to each other, this person you're supposedly in love with. You're lying to them,
mm-hmm.
and you're lying to God. And so I use that to say, all right, well, what? So sex outside of marriage, this is not right. What's another one? Why non-Catholics can't receive communion in the Catholic Church?
Mm. Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
And I tell people, I say, well, if anybody ever asks you, you know, because people all the time, they have non-Catholic relatives, if they are family and friends that come to church with them, they say, well, you can't receive communion. What? I can't receive the Lord's table. I have a right to. I'm a Christian. I believe, you know, that Jesus is present there. Most of the time, that's in a spiritual aspect, is their belief. But there are some who would say, I actually believe that's the body and blood, soul and divinity of Jesus Christ. But here's the thing: they haven't made a commitment to the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
The Eucharist is the sign that there is a commitment,
mm-hmm.
between the church and me. And it's the seal of that commitment. Well, if that commitment's not there, then to, you know, receive communion is a lie.
Right.
Because you're saying with your body, I believe as you believe, Catholics, and not just on the Eucharist, but on Mary, on purgatory, on the Pope, on the Bible, on salvation, et cetera, the whole gamut. Well, if you don't believe that, and you're not in union with the church, then you shouldn't receive communion in the church.
Yeah.
And so I tell Catholics, I said, look, if somebody's asked you why I, as a non-Catholic, can't receive communion in the Catholic Church, just tell them, say, well, it's because we don't believe in sex outside of marriage.
Yeah, that'll shut them up real fast.
And they'll go, they'll look at, what?
What are you saying about me?
Yeah.
And then, when they're in that moment of just stupefaction, now you've got a chance. They're completely, their brain has been wiped by what you just said. They don't comprehend it. They're mystified, stupefied. Now you've got a chance to plant a seed,
right,
and explain.
The walls have been broken down.
Yes, yeah. This is what I'm saying to you.
Yeah.
And I've had people write me, say, you know, I remember this one woman's email very clearly. She wrote, my husband and I, every time he would go to church with me, this was a problem. He's not Catholic. And he would, for years, he complained, why can't I receive communion? He listened to your CD on that topic. He said, oh, okay.
Why didn't you tell me that?
Yeah. Well, you know, and she had never heard it that way either.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so she heard it, gave it to him. And he said, oh, okay. Now I understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you're not in communion with our communion, then to receive communion with us is a lie.
Yeah.
Because once again, the ends don't match with your reality.
Yeah.
And that's why we can't, if we go, you know, if a Catholic, sometimes Catholics, especially in this part of the country where Catholics are drastically outnumbered, we'll get invited by friends and family or, you know, anybody to, well, hey, why don't you come to my Baptist church with me? And that can be a good thing to do, you know, if you're trying to maybe build trust or, you know, a relationship,
right,
with that person. But if they have a communion service, a Catholic cannot receive, because it's like cheating on your spouse.
Well, and it's the same reason, because people don't realize you can lie without opening your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you lie with your body. When you as a Catholic go up to receive, or you know, they usually pass around the wafer and the grape juice. If you partake in that, then you're saying with, by your actions, I believe as you believe, but you don't. You're basically saying that, well, what we're doing here is the exact same thing we're doing in my church. Mm-hmm. And it's not.
Right.
So you're lying. Mm-hmm. You're lying before man. You're lying before God. And so that's why Catholics cannot receive communion or the Lord's Supper, whatever it might be called, in a non-Catholic church.
Excellent. Excellent. We're going to take a break. When we get back, we're going to finish up this good conversation. We're here with John Martinoni. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Show. I'm David Niles with Adam Minahan. We're here with John Martinoni. We're talking about marriage and the Eucharist and the many parallels between the two. One of my, well, I don't know, I was going to say favorites, but John Paul II, he wrote the Theology of the Body, which you mentioned, and he says that of all of the analogies or titles given to Christ in the Bible, you know, he's referred to as the door and the vine or even the mother hen, that the best title for him is the bridegroom. And I think it's also the most common of all these analogies that are applied to Christ. And he said that's because he actually is a bridegroom. He is like a door. He is like a vine, but he is a bridegroom. And for me, as a man, one thing that I've always been unsure, I could see how as a woman relating to Christ as the bridegroom, all right, that makes sense. For me as a man, what is the appropriate attitude or maybe disposition to embrace Christ as bridegroom?
Well, it is a different feeling.
Yeah.
A different perspective, and but it is the fact that since the church is the bride and we all, male and female, are members of the church, then individually we are all in a sense brides of Christ. Mm-hmm. And the way I've looked at that is just I look at it not in terms of male, female, but in terms of how I become one with my wife, I look at it in terms of union.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I look at the totality of it rather than the individual.
Right.
Of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know. So, otherwise, you just say, "Well, okay, I'm a woman." You know.
Right.
You
or
know, which on a man's show, that's you know, it's not.
It's material heresy.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, I'm glad you mentioned that. So you don't want to that's the wrong way to look at it. Otherwise, you end up with some sort of messed up homosexual Christ and me relationship.
Yeah, no, it's we're the brides.
Right, and it's like, would you say it's that he is the initiator and we are the receiver?
Yes.
As humanity, and that's kind of what and that's mean, actually like, as a whole.
One more parallel between Eucharist and marriage is this whole thing about same-sex marriage, quote-unquote, mm-hmm. which I always tell people, there is not now, never has been, never will be such a thing as a same-sex marriage, no matter how many licenses are issued, no matter how many judges say there is such a thing, there's not, never will be, not happen. Is the fact that, and the reason why there cannot be is because between two men, you know, in the relationship, exactly what you said, in the relationship of marriage, there is one who gives, one who receives. Mm-hmm. With two men, there's no one to receive.
Right.
With two women, there's no one to give. And the analogy to the Eucharist, it would be like with two men, you know, no one to receive. It would be as if Jesus died on the cross, but never actually instituted the Eucharist. So there's nothing to be received.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh,
okay.
I may be getting this mixed up because, you know, I've had some of this. I've had a scooch of scotch. But with two women, yeah. I turned it around.
You turned it around.
You're right.
Yeah.
With two women, there's nothing to give.
Right.
Okay. So it'd be like Christ died on the cross but never instituted the Eucharist.
Yeah.
So there's nothing to give.
Right.
You know, so we can't become one. Mm-hmm. With two men, it's, well, Christ instituted the Eucharist, but he never died on the cross. Okay? So it's like there's nothing to receive.
Right.
You know, because he didn't die on the cross for us. And so that's why there can't be a same-sex marriage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because in one, either instance, either there's no one to give or there's no one to receive. The two cannot become one.
Christianity is just so full of paradoxes. So even Christ, who is the giver of the gift with respect to us, his bride, is the receiver of the gift with respect to God the Father. You know, God the Father initiates that gift of love in the Holy Trinity, and it's Christ who is the receiver in that aspect. So it's just paradox after paradox.
Yes,
and they're all very beautiful.
And it boggles the mind.
Yes, it does.
Over the break, you were talking to us about geofencing. What is geofencing?
Okay. This is cool.
Okay.
And I'm going to, again, spill the beans here. First time. You're getting the scoop.
Yes.
Nobody in Birmingham where I'm doing this knows about this. Knows that it's about to happen. Several months ago, a church in Birmingham, and I name names. I'm sorry, people don't like that. Hunter Street Baptist Church.
Okay.
You got to own what you do. That's my thing. So they did a six-week series on the Catholic Church. Catholics who were married to Baptists that go to that church went to one or two of them and were appalled at what they were hearing. And I heard from three different Catholics within just a few days, hey, can you do something about this? I had things going on, but I was able to make the last in the series, which was entitled How to Evangelize Catholics. So I'm sitting there, the director of evangelization for the Catholic Diocese of Birmingham, listening to a talk from Baptists on how to evangelize Catholics. I thought, this is rather unique.
I don't think they would have let you in if they knew.
And so I ended up talking to the guy afterwards. I didn't raise any stink during the talk, which I was sorely tempted. But talked to him afterwards, and I proposed, hey, why don't we have a public dialogue? Because I told him, I said, I appreciate the spirit in which you gave it, because he was genuinely concerned for Catholic souls. I appreciate that. I try to teach Catholics. That's how we need to be. Mm-hmm. We need to be concerned for the salvation of people's souls.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, but you materially misrepresented Catholic teaching probably 80% of the time. You know, maybe a little bit in some of it, a lot in others. And I said, I know you're not doing it out of malice, or I said, you're getting it wrong. I told him, I said, it's kind of like if I wanted to learn about the Republican Party, would I go to a seminar on Republicans run by Nancy Pelosi?
Right.
You know, no, I wouldn't.
She's going to shoot it straight, don't you think?
Even if she quotes Republicans,
right,
the perspective is going to be skewed.
Right.
You know, now with Nancy Pelosi, it would be, you know, probably intentionally. Here it was not intentional, but right, it was skewed nonetheless.
Yeah.
So he said, well, I'd love to, but my senior pastor has to approve, because he was just like this guy was the minister of membership or something like that. So I said, oh, he's giving himself an out. So what I've done recently is I published an open letter the pastor a letter saying, you know, this is what happened at your church. Your minister, he misrepresented things. I'm not blaming him, not angry. We had a pleasant discussion after his talk. I'd like to make that public. because Baptists would, I think, would enjoy it and learn from it. Catholics would enjoy it and learn from it. I said, just each side, not a debate, just each side presenting their beliefs from their perspective, interaction, questions from the audience. The pastor never responded to me, but through this other minister, he said, no, not interested. Now I'm a little upset.
Yeah.
Okay. Because you're saying something behind your closed doors of your church mm-hmm. that you're apparently not willing to say out in public.
Yeah.
And I've just told you as a Catholic that what you said about the Catholic Church was wrong, and you don't seem to care.
Well, not just a Catholic, but you are employed by the diocese, you know, or, you know, representing the diocese in some capacity. And
right.
You know.
I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Right.
So what I'm doing now, I've been putting ads in the newspaper for the Catholic Church in Birmingham and Huntsville once a month for the last 12 months. Full page, full color ads, the Eucharist, the infallibility of the Pope, the rapture, all this stuff. Been doing that for the last 12 months, trying to plant seeds, gotten really good response. Online ads too, banner advertising, millions of banner ads online. But now what I'm going to do is I'm going to geofence this church. You know, when you turn on your smartphone, if you'd been looking for a car online, when you turn on your smartphone the next day, what are you going to have? Banner ads about cars,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they track you based on your interest. Well, geofencing is where they track you based on your geographic location, okay? Mm-hmm. So if I say I want to send ads about the Catholic Church to everybody in this, within these geographic boundaries, latitude and longitude, do it. And they can do that.
Right.
So I am geofencing Hunter Street Baptist Church. For the next 2 months, when they walk into their church, if they have their smartphone on, they're going to get a banner ad about that says, an open letter to the senior pastor and members of Hunter Street Baptist Church. And if they click on it, it goes to my website and my open letter to the pastor requesting public dialogue. And then I'm also going to geofence Hoover, which Hunter Street Baptist Church is in Hoover. It's a suburb of Birmingham, one of the largest suburbs, the largest suburb of Birmingham. And that's going to have an ad. It's going to have a quiz for Christians. Hmm. And in the quiz, it goes to my website where it's got a quiz, which was one of my ads in the newspaper. Number one, did Jesus Christ found a church? Yes, here's it. How long ago did Jesus Christ live? 2,000 years ago. How old should the church Jesus Christ founded be? 2,000 years. And go from there.
Nice. So
that's geofencing.
Nice. Well, John, thanks so much for hanging out with us.
It's been my pleasure, gentlemen.
It's been a lot of fun. BibleChristianSociety.com. Go check it out. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.